to another episode of the Dope Black Women Podcast. I'm Leanne Levers, and today we're speaking with two professional women athletes who are doing amazing things in their respective sports, Danusha Francis and one of our own dope black women, Kapari.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
So just to quickly introduce you to the audience, although I'm sure in your respective sports, you're both very well known. You know, I'm really excited to have both of you on, actually, because both of you play or compete in sports that I am a huge fan of. A huge fan of gymnastics. I grew up watching gymnastics at the Olympics when I was younger with my dad and the rest of my family. It was like, so Danusha, if you want to introduce yourself.
Yeah, so I started gymnastics when I was 5 and saw it at the 2000 Olympics when I was 6 and kind of loved seeing the sport that I was obsessed with at that point on TV and kind of made it my dream at that point to go to the Olympics. Obviously, as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, I didn't know if I had the potential, but once I kind of knew I did as I got older and was sort of talent scouted and made the GB team to start with, and and the goal became a lot more realistic. So that was my dream for a long time, and it took me 3 Olympic cycles to get there, plus a year of COVID, but I eventually made it in 2021. But it wasn't easy, I'm not gonna lie, but it was a lot of fun. Lots of life lessons have been learned, and I do artistic gymnastics, so it's all the apparatus. The women do the vault, the bars, the beam and the floor. And I compete for Jamaica now. So, so I used to compete for Great Britain till I was about 19 and then started competing for Jamaica in 2015.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, I think one of the first times I saw you was when you were competing for Jamaica and you delivered this amazing beam routine, which I think went viral. So we'll definitely get into talking about that. And Kapari, you play tennis, which I have for years trying to pretend like I could be a professional tennis player. But unfortunately, sadly, I'm not that great. But I do enjoy playing and I absolutely love watching tennis. It's one of my favorite sports to play. So tell us about yourself and your life as a tennis player.
Amazing.
Okay. I'm Kapari Elizabeth Bagevase. I've been around tennis and other sports growing up due to my dad being not only a tennis coach, but also an instructor in taekwondo and other sports in his university. So that's how I got into tennis. And I've been playing since I was quite young, and I've been competing for Ghana as well since I was very young. And even though not living here and not being necessarily part of like the culture, being born here gave me the opportunity and the privilege to compete for them on an international level. And I've been doing that since I was maybe 10 years old. I played Division I tennis in the US, and as well, I just recently broke through into the professional field end of 2019, and then COVID happened. So it's been a grind, an uphill grind since then.
Congratulations for breaking through to the pros. That's amazing.
Thank you.
And it's interesting because I was doing a little bit of research prior to having this conversation with both of you. And again, historically, both tennis and gymnastics seem to have less Black women participating. But there seems to be a change. I read that last year, I think, a record of 12 Black women made up 37% of US women's singles.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's quite insane how much there's this lack of diversity in a lot of these sports, especially gymnastics and tennis. Besides Serena and the Venus sisters, I rarely had anyone to look up to when I was playing. I just played because I loved it, and it just turned out that I was good enough to compete at the level that I was, and I just ran with it. The few role models that I had growing up basically would leave the sport because there was the expenses and keeping up at that high level was just too much to maintain. Most of them have had parents who would tell them to focus on school because that was much more reliable and you could get a job after, whereas tennis is a bit of a gamble, to be fair. So I'm so happy to hear that more Black women and women of color are joining the sports and doing more. And it's just a privilege to be part of that narrative.
And Danusha, do you feel the same way? Because I think back in 2012, there was like 3% of Black women participating in US gymnastics. And I think there has been an increase. But growing up, did you feel that there was, I don't know, who you saw on TV that inspired you, or if you just kind of loved the sport and didn't really think about race in that context until you got to a certain age?
Yeah, I think when I was really young, sort of 5 and 6, you are quite oblivious to race. So when I look back, my role models were white gymnasts. But now, as you say, there's a lot more Black women. Obviously, Simone Biles, everybody knows her. She's a worldwide name now, which is amazing. But before her, Gabby Douglas, and a lot of the Americans are now. But not just the Americans. We've got women of colour from all different countries now, and it is amazing, and it's a true honour for myself to be representing that. And also when parents come up to me who have curly haired children or Black children, and they sort of thank you for inspiring their child and for their child to have someone that looks like them in the sport that, like you say, was predominantly a white sport, and especially gymnastics was back in the day very dominated by the Eastern European countries. The USSR, obviously, for years, your Nadia Comaneci's and everyone like that. So it's really great to see the shift and to be a part of it as well.
And what is it that you both love about playing tennis or competing in gymnastics? What's the drive for you to maintain, even though, as Kapari said, it sometimes is a thankless sport in terms of funding and money, and, you know, it takes a while to become recognized within your respective sports, just as people who are comparable and to be respected within the sport. So what keeps you going?
Who was going first?
Okay, I think I would go first. There are a few things that do make me feel appreciative, and I think it's the opportunities it's offered me and my family. Due to not having much growing up, it's opened a lot of doors for me. So I think that's the reason why I still love it so much. I played it because I loved it, not because I thought I was going to get anything out of it. And I think as an adult, it came back to me. And I just wanted to give myself the grace to follow the dreams that I set for myself as a young kid than giving up on them just because there weren't opportunities. I think my drive comes from finding doors and opportunities where there aren't, and being able to open more doors, not just for myself, but for the younger girls behind me who see me in Ghana or anywhere else in the world, and they're like, oh my gosh, I knew you when you were a kid, or my mom knew you and they said I could be like you. So there are not a lot of them, but hearing it once is enough for me to be like, you know what, I can do it.
Obviously, as a child, you're just doing it for the pure love, and you just enjoy being there and training and every single thing that the sport has to offer as a child. And obviously, it gets a bit tougher, but you just kind of have to take yourself back to why you started it. And then, as Kapari said, also the opportunities that come along with sort of following your dream, training hard to reach your gymnastics and tennis goals, and then that opens doors along the way. And then also, very similar to what Kapari said, as in competing for Jamaica has been absolutely incredible. Just since 2015, I've been able to witness the opening of the national facility, which is in 2019. I was there at the opening and just seeing so many young kids shining and loving the sport that I've loved for so long, and now getting to have that opportunity in Jamaica, and that wasn't something that they had the opportunity to do before sort of myself and the other gymnasts that have competed internationally were able to help blaze the trail. And obviously loads of other people behind the scenes, are president of Jamaican Gymnastics, she's great at kind of getting the funding as well. But yeah, it's just amazing when you think it just started off as almost an after-school hobby, and now you've been able to inspire so many young kids to the point where hopefully one day a homegrown Jamaican gymnast will be on the top of the podium. I 100% see that happening, so it's really cool.
That's amazing. And actually, I didn't even know that we had a gymnastics association. I was born and raised in Jamaica, and I guess similar to both of you, have lived elsewhere for a really long time. and actually just moved back. And it's interesting that both of you have made the choice to represent a country that you actually don't necessarily live in, but have some connection to, or, you know, that's where your roots are. Danush, are you Jamaican? Like, what was your process in terms of choosing to represent Jamaica, having represented Great Britain previously?
Yeah, so my dad is Jamaican and my dad's family. So I was competing for Great Britain, and then I was at university in LA at UCLA on a gymnastics scholarship. And when I was there, it kind of really reignited my love for the sport. And I decided I wanted to carry on competing internationally. So this wasn't really possible for Great Britain, because so I kind of looked into my options. My mum's family and my mum are Polish, and then my dad's Jamaican. But always growing up watching the Olympics, the Jamaicans always seemed to have so much fun, charisma, and I wanted to be a Jamaican athlete just from seeing that. So we looked into it, and there was one gymnast already competing for Jamaica. So we got in touch with them and got the process started from there. So I'm actually not close with my dad at all. We don't really have a relationship. So I haven't really grown up with much Jamaican culture at all. But I was always so proud, like I said, watching the Olympics. But now competing for Jamaica, I feel more Jamaican than ever. And I'm just so proud and excited every time I get to wear the flag.
So it's actually been a way for you to reconnect with your Jamaican roots, despite the fact that, you, as you said, you don't have a relationship with your dad. And how has that been? Like, what's been the process of coming here, and people in life, I think, especially when it comes to sports? I think sports and education are oftentimes a way of escaping certain realities of being in Jamaica, some of the more difficult, hard things around politics and access to resources and poverty and those kinds of things. So I think, you know, the stories that we get out of our athletes in terms of being able to succeed is something that is quite inspirational to people, and it gives them hope.
I think my parents were quite pragmatic in raising me predominantly in like an African sense, because they knew if I did want to pursue let's say a career out of what I did, I think they knew the safest bet would be for me to compete as a Ghanaian, as opposed to any other, from being like, again, like competing as an English person, having my mom and half of my family being part of the English I guess community. So I think the motivation was because I wouldn't have to face, it's sad to think about it this way, but I think, especially my dad used to say, I wouldn't have to face having to prove my Britishness in the predominantly white space, whereas as a Ghanaian, being born here as well would give me a boost in terms of competing on an international scale. I wouldn't have to prove to be so British to be able to represent England, whereas I would have more freedom and more accessibility to being competing as a Ghanaian. And as an adult now, I see what he means, and I think it speaks true and rings true, because I don't know if I would have had the same opportunities if I, let's say, competed as a British national growing up.
Do you both feel like your journey has been a little bit different from your maybe white counterparts, or just British counterparts in general? I mean, Kapari, you spoke a little bit earlier about whether or not to go by your English name or your Ghanaian name. And Danush, I don't know if when you did represent Great Britain, whether you felt different from your other colleagues, or if you found that your journey or some of the challenges that you faced were slightly different.
So I think I was quite lucky that, so when I was 9, I moved to a gym club at Heathrow, so in London. And luckily there was quite a mixture of ethnicities. So there was actually 5 of us on the national squad at one point, so on the Great Britain national squad, and 3 of us were actually black. So there was never a time when I was kind of like the only black one or anything like that. And I think we did stick together, and we'd kind of had this banter that, yeah, so I think it started from a young age as sort of ignorance was bliss, and then it started as me and my friends that were on the national squad, and we were the better gymnasts, say, in our club, and we happened to be black. So it was never actually kind of a negative, which I think is very lucky and unfortunate for that.
It's a bit different in terms of my journey. I think the reason why that was a bit more on the other side was because the spaces that I moved to were predominantly white. And I think it was also the reason why it was easier to compete as a Ghanaian, because it was cheaper to do that, because training in the UK was a lot more expensive as a tennis player than it was. So I ended up training most of the time in South Africa and in Ghana, as opposed to in England, because my parents weren't able to afford the facilities and the coaches and all of that. So I think besides everything I've said, I think it was also a financial decision to have the support of a country that was willing to pay for a lot of things and help support my family when they didn't have the finances to help me move forward with. Yeah, I would have traveled a lot, because tennis is a very, it's spread out across different countries and continents. So I had to travel a lot, and my parents obviously did not have the financial backing to have me do that every other week or every other month to go play a tournament across the ocean. So it was really good to have the support of a federation at such a young age to help provide for the expenses that my parents couldn't cover.
You mentioned, you know, having to travel a lot, and Danusha, I know the training for gymnastics is super intense. Like, it takes a lot of your time, I would imagine. How did becoming involved in such kind of competitive sports, where training is such a heavy part of what you do, did that affect, you know, education? Did that affect dating? What's that like for you now? Being so, you know, tied to such demanding sports. I mean,
so for me, when I was 9, as I mentioned, I went to boarding school. So this was on a gymnastics scholarship, and they were obviously very accommodating of the gymnastics. So I was really grateful for that, and it was amazing. Obviously, you still had to do all your exams and all your homework, so it's still pretty full on, but also my gymnastics club was great in that they never took us out of school to train, which a lot of clubs did and still do. So we would train in the evenings, and then we'd also have an evening off in the week. So we usually could get all our schoolwork done and stuff like that. And I always was someone that did want to go to parties and sort of go and enjoy myself and have a life outside of gymnastics. So somehow I made that work. And when people ask me sort of how, it's hard to really pinpoint exactly how, but I think when you have to do something, you just manage it. You manage to have that time management and those skills where you can juggle everything. I was always a list maker, so I always have a to-do list and kind of in priority order, and I always get it done. So I think that would be my top tip for anyone that has a full-on schedule, whatever age you are, whether you're still in school, and I still do it to this day. And then dating wise, I would say, yeah, you're held back to some degree, but I never felt like, oh, I really am missing out. And then obviously once I got to university, there's a lot more kind of parties and socializing there, because my boarding school was all girls, and obviously I trained with mainly girls as well. And then now I'm engaged, so.
Oh, wow, congratulations. Did you
thank
meet
you.
Your fiance?
Thank you.
Is he British or is he from UCLA? Is he American?
He's British, but he's actually half Jamaican as well.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I like him already and I don't even know him.
He's a good one.
And is he an athlete? I mean, have you been able to date outside of the athlete's arena or?
So he's actually an osteopath and he slid in my DMs. So that's how we met. And I guess with sort of social media and online dating and stuff like that, you kind of have this access to everyone in a way. And then obviously when you've got a little bit of a platform, more people see you. So you get more DMs.
That's amazing. And I guess as an osteopath, he can help in terms of your injuries, and he doubles as a professional aid, right?
Yeah, I've got it all right, I think. And ticking all the boxes.
Kapari, what's it been like for you?
Oh, it's quite similar as well, because I got a scholarship into a boarding school when I was basically 10, 11. So I was also in an environment that prioritized like tennis in the school. So I didn't really have that much of a social life in terms of going out, hanging out with friends who weren't tennis players or other athletes. Luckily, mine was co-ed. So I did have like guy friends and girlfriends, but I didn't really date much because I don't know, like, I think at that age, I was so focused on doing what I needed to do and like just pass classes and get to tournaments. And I didn't really think about dating. I think my social life kind of expanded when I did, when I ended up in university. And even then, I think I prioritized so much of tennis in school. It was mainly just around other tennis players, other athletes. And yeah, so I would say there hasn't been much that has changed. Most of the focus is just on training and working and just getting myself recovered and prepared. I don't have much of a social life, but I'm quite happy with it because I'm doing what I love. So that's the gist of it.
Funny, because I think we met in London as an event, right? So I'm assuming that was one of your like few nights out.
That's actually true. I'd been looking forward to that event for such a long time because outside of being an athlete, I do have other dreams and goals as well. So just being in that environment, like stimulating my creative juices and being part of like a Black community that was so keen and so intellectual and so special, it made me so happy. So yeah, that was my one time. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to go.
Shout out to Love of Culture and Victoria for hosting the most amazing arts and literary events that are in London. She's great, and she's also part of our Dope Black Women group.
Big up to them. Yeah, big up to them.
But you made a really good point, actually, which is kind of outside dreams, because I think for athletes, there's always like, much like for women, I guess, when you think about this like biological clock that's ticking, there is a body clock that's ticking for both of you in terms of your capacity to perform after a certain age, right? And that age is relatively young for sports, particularly for your sports, for tennis and for gymnastics. Do you have outside dreams? Do you work on those at the same time?
Yes. Can you hear me? I have to just check every time now. Okay. I love tennis, and that's what my ultimate goal and passion lies. That's where my ultimate goal and passion lies, and I hope that all my dreams do come. But outside of that, I do I aspire to be a writer one day. I would like to work in sustainability as well, and it's just a dream of mine to be part of the academic world. Anyone who knows me knows I'm quite a huge scholastic buff. I like being in academic environments and passing on knowledge, sharing knowledge and learning all that I can about the world. So that's like one of my dreams, to be in, you know, a writer, a teacher, just any way that I can stimulate my brain outside of just hitting tennis balls is just a massive dream of mine. I, as you know, for the culture, I've been part of different artistic events in my time in university and outside of university, being part of poetry, writing, art. And so I think my interests vary a lot, but I do know where my direction lies. And I'm glad I get to work side by side. Most of the time when I do get the opportunity, I take it to work on my other craft as well as being a tennis player.
Danusha, what about you? What is the timeline for a gymnast, actually? I'm not really sure what age you stop competing at generally, and what do you have plans, like what's your tenure?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say, Kapari, I just loved how you spoke about your dreams just then and how there was like more than one, and it just sounded like you were so passionate, and I just felt like this girl's definitely going to do it. So keep, like, I don't know, just something in your voice just made me sort of happy. I just felt like you can achieve anything you put your mind to, and I've only just spoke to you for a few minutes, so yeah. Anyway, so for gymnastics, it's kind of been historic that it's such a young sport. The narrative is slightly shifting, and it's really cool for myself at 27 to kind of be a part of that. So growing up, it was always known that whichever Olympics you were first eligible. So in gymnastics, you are eligible from 16 to go to the Olympics. That was your opportunity. So whether you turned 16 or 19 the Olympic year, that was your opportunity, your sort of one shot. So for me, that was 2012. Yeah. Wow. And I was going to be 18 that year. And growing up, I was like, I'm either going to make it or I'm not. And I kind of like had that in my head. And then going off to UCLA and obviously doing the sport for longer than I'd planned, because I'd always thought I was going to retire at 18, whether I'd made the Olympics or not. And then my mind was open to the universities in America, which is such an unbelievable opportunity. I had the time of my life. You're competing and performing in front of thousands, sort of 10,000 people every weekend, and I just loved it. And again, as I mentioned earlier, that was why I then decided to go back into international competitions. And then from there, I never put that sort of time limit on myself, and decided, like, why should I only have that one shot at the Olympics when I'm still just as good a gymnast and actually a better competitor after doing the college route in America? So that was when I went for my next two Olympic cycles and finally made it, and then managed to get some jobs in stunts. So I was in the Wonder Woman movie as a stunt double for one of the Amazons, and then I was in a Netflix movie and just a few other things along the way. So thanks. I didn't really see myself in that career, but sometimes when a door opens, that's like, that's a sign. So I'm kind of pursuing that now. Obviously, I've got an injury at the moment. I've torn my ACL, so I just had surgery last week. So that, I also do coaching, and I'll always have some part in gymnastics. So probably a long-term goal of mine would be to open a gym, and then also to be able to bring some gymnasts over from Jamaica as well and have them train here, whether it's in my gym or whether it's in a gym that I'm coaching at, and also to go over to Jamaica and help to coach there and just help the sport to continue to grow in Jamaica. So I would say those are sort of my goals, obviously along with marriage and kids eventually I would like to have.
Dope. Anna, congratulations. Yeah, it's crazy that being a gymnast would lead you into kind of being a stunt double, but as long as you're enjoying it, that sounds like a pretty dope kind of career to segue into.
Yeah, so cool. It's opened my eyes. It's a whole different job, but obviously gymnastics and tennis and any high level sport really prepares you for so many things in life, and you don't even realize how many life lessons you're learning because it's just your norm, but you're learning so much valuable things along the way.
Oh, sorry, I was just mesmerized. I was honestly so gassed when she said stand up. I was like, oh my gosh. But it's everything she said, I just kept on nodding, and I was like, yes, everything. Because at the end of the day, I would like to go back to the thing you said about having a clock put on you. We could talk on and on about just the sports and being successful as a woman of color, or being from a country that doesn't really have much representation on the global scale. And I get asked that question so often, like, oh, do you think you still got this? And how are you going to do it? How are you going to push yourself? And people, I just think it's so great to hear what Denisha said about, regardless of being a certain age, if you still push through. For example, being in the US helped you gain that love for it. Is the same thing that happened for me, because I didn't think I would have the opportunity after I was done with my time in the US, because I got injured as well on my senior year. And just having that push and having that motivation helped me.
That's an interesting question. I think at the time when you're doing something, whether it's sort of helping young gymnasts or whatever it might be, you're not sort of thinking, oh, what is this gonna lead to in the future, as in a legacy. So I've never really thought, I've never planned anything for it to be a legacy, but I think if I was to look at myself in the future, or even like way into the future when I'm gone, I would just want people to think of me as a great performer. And obviously the gymnastics is one thing, but I just love the performance side of it and kind of connecting with fans and audience members. And then along with that, just inspiring Black gymnasts, Black athletes, Black females to also pursue their dreams, whether they're sports dreams, whether they're completely different. But it's really cool to me when you have people that are nothing to do with gymnastics that reach out to you and they've been inspired by you in some way. I received a message one time, well, he actually contacted my coach. This was when I was at university in America, and said how he was so inspired by my gymnastics performances that he had lost, I think it was like around 10 stone since he'd become a fan. Yeah, so it's just so cool to be able to touch people in that way.
I mean, yeah, that's amazing. And I think already you've done so much just by being one of the few visible Jamaican gymnasts. I mean, I think I was here when your beam performance went viral and everybody was just so excited and everybody was talking about it. I think we shared it on the Dope Black Women page as well.
Wow. No, I was just agreeing with you. I was like, yeah, I think it was shared on the group chat.
Yeah, I'm sure we had a conversation about it, right? Because it's something that you never get to see. I mean, and for tennis as well, we've had Kapari for you. I don't know how many women Ghanaian players there are either, or even male Ghanaian tennis players actually.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate to even think about, because there aren't a lot. The potential is there. Most of them have to either back down at the age of 18, 19 to make the choice to either pursue it or go to school or find something else to do, quote unquote, with their lives, just because there is no support. So there used to be a few that were up and coming when I was growing up, but most of them no longer compete anymore. I only know a few Caribbean girls on tour.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that kind of dispels the myth. You know, most people I think would say, oh, we don't see them because nobody's interested, which I think is far from the truth. I know so many girls that want to become gymnasts when they get older. And I certainly know loads of Black women who love playing tennis, even if they don't play professionally, who actually love playing. So it's not that they're not interested, it's just literally the lack of opportunity, right?
It's not just, say, Black in West and South Africa or on the African continent, but I have the same conversation with other athletes from developing countries around the globe. I have peers in North Africa who are struggling with the same things I'm struggling with. We talk about it constantly. We're trying to find ways to make it more accessible. Even simple things like traveling to other countries because of your passport is an issue. You know, if you're from a certain part of the world, just traveling to another country to compete is such a hassle. You have to get so many documents verified. By the time you're ready to go, you're already broke. How are you going to take care of yourself when you get there? It's really, really disheartening, but it is what it is.
So, I mean, following on from that, what would you say is the most important thing in terms of making sure that Black women athletes have access or have opportunities in your respective sports, both for gymnastics and for tennis?
Well, I think kind of what Kapari and myself are doing, like having older people in the sport who are making it happen. Because say if there's someone that is at that age where they have to decide whether they're going to just concentrate on their education or whether they can pursue their dreams of their sport, if there's literally no one that they've ever known that's done it, they might not have that extra bit of grit and determination to be that first person. And it's so scary if there's no one that's done it before. So if they can see someone else that they can slightly relate to, whether they're from the exact same country or a different country with similar struggles, then that's it. That shows them that it can be done. Where there's more people interested, then you can get a bit more funding and you can have more facilities opening, and hopefully more schools will get to start doing it in their PE lessons and stuff like that. So obviously here in Britain, we're introduced to a lot of these sports in PE. So then it's just a lot more straightforward that, oh, I enjoyed that in PE. You tell your parents and then they can inquire. But if they're not sort of even getting those opportunities, then they wouldn't even really know about it at a young age. And then they might not even start. Obviously a lot of these sports get to a higher level, you need to start young. So yeah, getting it really at that grassroots level and then also having those role models to look up to and to know that they can make it.
Okay, so I just wanted to add on to what Denisha said about the opportunities that are being offered. Every time I do, let's say, for example, I travel back to Ghana, I partner up with foundations and communities and schools to do programs and workshops and just activities that bring school kids into like the tennis arena, introduce them to what tennis is like. And most of the time, I just want them to enjoy it. I don't really care about where they take tennis, but making it accessible for kids, especially girls, to be able to compete and play as much as they need to, and just to explore other things outside of just being one-dimensional people. And I, when I was growing up, it was great to be an academic or a very studious girl, but I loved school, but I also loved other things. And I'm grateful my parents allowed me to explore that, and I want to pass on that opportunity just beyond competing as a professional athlete, but as just being a multidimensional young individual as well.
I think that's quite a fitting way to end the conversation. There is one thing that we ask all of our guests, which people usually shy away from, but this is one, it's the one opportunity that you have to really like gas yourselves. And and we like to create moments where people can love on themselves. So the question is, what makes you a dope Black woman?
So what makes me a dope Black woman is my grit, my determination, my curly hair and my brown skin, and my willingness to help others, especially the younger generation.
Yeah, that's dope.
Oh, and it's pretty dope to be a stunt woman.
It is pretty fucking dope to be a stunt woman.
Wow, I love that. I love everything about that.
Thank you.
Oh gosh, what makes me a dope Black woman is my relentlessness, my ability to be able to be part of the community and thrive for the best for my community. What makes me dope as a Black woman is, like you said, my skin and my ability to be able to transform into whoever I want to and just be great at it. Oh
yes,
I feel like there's so many things I want to say that are dope about myself, but most importantly, I think what makes me dope is my compassion and my love for my people, and they would always have a special place in my heart. And everything that I do at the end of the day, it might be for me, but people don't know that I do it for my community as well, across the diaspora and everywhere else in the world. So yeah.
Yes, say it louder for the people in the back.
Oh ladies, that's so amazing. You've given me like goosebumps and made me feel really good about this conversation. It's been so lovely hearing both of you just kind of share your stories with us, and I'm sure it will be extremely inspirational for not just other aspiring athletes, but just other women who, as you said, want to be themselves and want to kind of try something new, but they might be scared to. And so I think just both of you are examples of going for your dreams, no matter how outrageous they seem to everyone else. And so thank you for sharing your stories. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Lia.
Thank you for having us.
I do want to say one thing before we log off.
Yeah.
I want to say that I was following your story during the Olympics, Anusha, and I wanted to big you up so bad, but my computer was such a liability. You have no idea how much like it means to see it. I think I got emotional and stuff, but I'm not trying to make you feel so uncomfortable, but I really
no, that's so sweet, honestly. Every single person I've heard it from, like, it, every single person, it means something to me, because it wasn't easy, but I also knew like how important it was as well, like the same message we've been saying for those gymnasts back in Jamaica to see, or the whole Caribbean, the whole world really, to see someone that's tried so hard to reach their dreams and had to go through that, but to still have a smile and still enjoy the moment. So thank you so much.
I just said thank you, Leanne, and this was such a, like, such a great platform, and keep it going. So big up to you as well.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, big up Leanne. I've really enjoyed this, and I'm definitely going to be following Kapari and her journey in tennis. My mum's a huge tennis fan. She probably wishes I did tennis myself. So I'll have to introduce you to her, and she'll become a huge supporter of yours as well as me.
I would love that. I would love that.
So thanks so much, everyone who is listening. Don't forget to share and subscribe the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. On Twitter and Facebook, we're Dope Black Woman, and on Instagram, we're Dope Black Woman 1. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically Black.
All the way Black.
Blackity Black.
Black-tastic. Black-tastic.